Okay, we'll call the March 20, 2007 meeting of the K-12 Finance Division to order, and can I get a motion to approve the minutes of Friday, March 16th?
So moved.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve the minutes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Anzels, I understand you have an announcement or an introduction.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members, and folks in the audience. Like most of you, I have very, very good schools and very, very good kids, and I'm very proud of them. But they're here today from Greenway High School, the Greenway School District on the western Mesabi Iron Range. They're here on their, they paved their own way, and they're here to do some lobbying. And with that, I'd like Bonnie Matheson, their teacher, and the good kids from Greenway High School to please stand up and take a hand here. And I'm sure, kids, that the committee will take your recommendations to heart when we get serious about the budget.
Well, thank you, Representative Anzels. Thank you all for coming. We're glad that you're here today. Members, we're going to move to the third item on the agenda, House File 2021, and invite Representative Breinert up. And Representative Breinert, I will move House File 2021 for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill.
Thank you, Representative Merrill, Chair Merrill. Representative Slocum was going to be here, but she thought we were going to be first, so I'll just do my best to summarize her portion of the bill, and if there are questions, we'll refer them to her. House File 2021 is a merger of Representative Slocum's original House File 1680, which elaborates the charge to the Office of Educational Accountability, and my original House File 2021, which removes the 4-6 designations of the School Performance Report Card and directs the Office of Educational Accountability to convene and facilitate a group of experts to recommend to the legislature a restructuring of the Performance Report Cards. The broad umbrella goal of this bill is to hone elements of our system of accountability and to reassess our performance report cards. The common avenue for both of these goals is the Independent Office of Educational Accountability, which already exists in statute and has been charged with advising the legislature on assessment and accountability. Then the first part of the bill relates to the charge regarding educational accountability and what the changes are in that portion of the bill. Representative Slocum drafted with the help of David Heisted, who's the director of the Minneapolis Public Schools Assessment Office. Then the section of the bill for which I have a testifier today focuses on the student performance report cards. I'm sure that most of you are aware that our state report cards have gone through many iterations in regular efforts to keep them both more comprehensive and more accessible. Much of this has been accomplished, but a recurring issue remains. The measure for No Child Left Behind, or MCAs, now our MCA2s, remained the single measure for academic performance and the basis for the 5-star ranking that is the most publicized and utilized aspect of the report card. Without purporting to have the solution, this bill remands the matter to a group of experts convened through the Office of Educational Accountability, charging them to review the report card with a focus on equity and excellence, as well as multiple measures. With that overview, I would like to turn the mic over to Ed Waltman, Superintendent of Mankato Area Public Schools. Ed comes from a school finance background, and I'd like to introduce him as just the person you'd like to have on speed dial if you can't locate Tom Melcher. Ed?
Representative, if I were to do one quick step here, members, there is an amendment in our packet, the 2021A5 amendment.
I'm not moving that amendment.
You are not moving that amendment.
So. Oh, yeah. I am. Well, let me.
So you might not be Representative Breinert, but I'll move the amendment.
Okay. Okay, you're moving this amendment.
I will move the A5 amendment. Members, this is a technical amendment. All in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Superintendent Waltman.
Chair Morrow, members of the K-12 Finance Committee. My name is Ed Waltman. I am the superintendent for Mankato Area Public Schools, and I'm here on behalf of our Mankato Area Public Schools Legislative Committee to testify in favor of House File 2021. Our school district's legislative committee is also grassroots, much like Greenway of Coleraine. We have students, parents, community members, teachers, administrators, and school board members that serve on our committee. Each year, our legislative committee does set out a list of priorities for us to have the legislature consider. One of those priorities this year is to have the legislature take action to change the criteria for the 5-star school site rating system on school report cards by either eliminating the star rankings or to include additional or more educationally appropriate measurements of performance to label a school site. We believe that the current system that rates school sites only on results of one student test per year is inappropriate and is an inaccurate rating of a school site. Research has shown that test data can be highly unreliable. Differences in student body combined with statistical error in tests themselves make it extremely difficult to measure accuracy over a short period of time on only one test. And in addition, under the current rating system, if any one of the student groups at an individual school site does not meet adequate yearly progress, or AYP under the No Child Left Behind Act, the school site can only receive as a maximum 2 stars on the school report card, no matter how high the testing performance may have been for all of the students at that school site. You have a handout, I hope, at your table, and on page 4 is an example of what I'm talking about. It's for Mankato West Senior High School, and it's for the year 2006. You will note on page 4 that Mankato West Senior High School received the highest rating in reading possible under the current ranking system of 5 stars. However, in the area of mathematics, West Senior High School received a 2-star ranking because the special education group, which consists of 45 students, did not meet their AYP target. There are a total of 1,184 students at Mankato West Senior High School. We believe it is not appropriate to use a ranking system to publicly label a school site on the basis of one test results for one student group, which represents only 3% of the total student body. Mankato Area Public Schools consists of approximately 7,000 students who attend 16 different school sites. On page 5 of your handout is the summary of the star rankings for our 16 school sites. 12 of those school sites received 4 or 5 stars in the least one subject area on the current system. Even though our district has performed well under the current system, we believe that the ranking system is still inappropriate and needs to be changed to accurately report school performance using multiple measures rather than one test per year. And I think this is fact is particularly true now that there's discussion about tying finance or revenue to a school site based on these star rankings. House File 2021, in our opinion, makes common sense revisions to the current school performance report cards. The bill would eliminate the star rankings while retaining the valuable data included on the school report card. We believe that the data on the school report card is valuable to our citizens. There will still be the charts that show the MCA2 testing results as well as the AYP status for a school start. We're only proposing that the 4-star or 5-star ranking system be either eliminated or changed to more accurately reflect school performance at the school site. The bill also creates an advisory committee under the Independent Office of Educational Accountability and Measurement Experts who will consider and recommend how to structure school performance data and school performance report cards. The work of this committee is timely and very important. I wish to thank you for allowing me to share this information with you on behalf of our Mankato Area Legislative Committee.
Thank you, Superintendent Waltman.
This bill comes out of years of concern and discussion on these issues. In this legislative session, we've had several meetings, including one with the commissioner and one with Mark Davison, from the university and the former Educational Office of Accountability. There is a broad consensus that we need to move forward in some manner on these concerns, and I would ask for your support on this bill, and we would take questions at this time.
Representative Brandon, do you have any other testifiers?
No, I don't.
Okay. Members of the committee, any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have an oral amendment that I'd like to offer. On page 3, line 28, insert after the semicolon, to parents, semicolon. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that oral amendment.
Representative Erickson moves an oral amendment on making sure, Representative Erickson, that we have this down on line 3.28.
Correct.
After the semicolon. We'll hold 1 second while you have a chance to talk.
I understand I need to have them selected by someone.
Do you want to talk with Ms. Larson for a moment about this, and I'll ask other committee members if they have questions for Representative Leonard or Superintendent Waltman?
Yeah, there is. Mr. Chair, two parents selected by the Minnesota PTA, if that is the official name of the organization, and then the semicolon. But I don't know if that's their official name.
I'm not asking Mr. Strom right now to check.
The council will check.
Okay.
Pardon me?
I'm told we're Googling.
Yes. Let's Google. Mr. Chair, maybe I could call on counsel, Ms. Larson, to clarify this organization's name.
As we're looking that up, I'll ask Representative Brandon if you have a comment on this amendment.
Well, I do. I'm possibly open to this. I'm a little hesitant because the nature of this group is a group of experts. It's not meant to be a representative stakeholder group. I mean, these are all meant to be people who have expertise in the area of assessment. But I would be open to this with the understanding that if they are appointed by this parent organization, they are indeed parents with expertise and not just interest in the subject matter. Because that's the intention here, is to have a group of experts to assess to advise the legislature, who are the representative group.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As we do have some time, I'm curious. The State Council on Measurement in Education and the Minnesota Assessment Group, I'm not really familiar with them. And could you speak to them, Representative Brainerd?
Representative Brainerd.
Actually, counsel could speak to the names better than I could, because we did some research here to get representative groups that would have the appropriate experts. So if Ms. Larson would like to.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brainerd, the Minnesota Assessment Group was suggested by the University of Minnesota. The State Council on Measurement and Education is a statewide organization on measurement.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, just as a thought, I mean, we have five of the people on here from these two groups, and I guess, unless I just have missed it, I've been serving in this committee now for 5 years, and I'm not familiar with them, and it's interesting that am I missing something? The other members know about them or know what they assess or what they measure? I guess I'm not familiar.
I believe the Minnesota Assessment Group is a representative organization of all our assessment directors throughout the state. So they are school district employees with expertise in assessment. I know that in our district, our assessment coordinator belongs to that group and attends it regularly.
Ms. Larson, do you have anything to add to the description of either group? Okay, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, to speak to my amendment then, has counsel advised that it's the Minnesota PTA and perhaps that's written out in our text, but I'll let council determine that. I would argue that, you know, school superintendents don't necessarily come with expertise in assessment, neither do licensed teachers, and so I think parents complement this group in light of the fact that it's parents who look at the report cards. Thus, I think two parents selected by the Minnesota PTA would be invaluable to this advisory group that's making recommendations for changes.
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, again, the same. I am open to this, but with all the groups that are represented here, our goal is to get someone who has expertise. We want a superintendent who has expertise in assessment. And there are such in the superintendent's organization. We want, when we discussed with Education Minnesota having a teacher, our understanding was that teacher would be someone with expertise in assessment. So I'm open to having the parents with the understanding that they would be parents with some expertise in the area. There are a range of stakeholder groups that already exist that respond to the report card out of the Department of Education, and they do include parents. So this group has a unique charge to report back to the legislature from the point of view of psychometric professional input, you know, and that's a very specific charge. So I think that it's important to keep that in mind.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we could get someone from the department to, you know, give a statement of whether or not, I don't want a political statement, I just want a statement as to whether parents would be a valuable addition to this. Yes, and we have our gentleman coming forth.
Thank you, Representative York, tonight.
Please,
Mr. Chair, members, Dirk Matson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department. I think in light of I guess I'll cut the middle ground here and say that we do have parents who do participate on some of our advisory committees for assessment that do have some technical expertise. I can think of one who actually is a gentleman who does work with us regularly and serves on another committee to advise us on testing as required by statute, who is from the Minnesota PTA. And so my hope would be that if that's the desire and intent of the bill, that there would be an additional individual who would be able to do that as well.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson's motion is to amend line 3.28. We just confirmed the name. The amendment would read, after the semicolon, two parents selected by the Minnesota PTA. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask the representative, after hearing this discussion, do you see this as a friendly amendment or not?
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Byrne, I'm willing to accept it as a friendly amendment.
And Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Byrne would incorporate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other discussion on this amendment? We do have to vote on this amendment even if it is a friendly amendment. If there's no other discussion, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The amendment is incorporated. Representative Bryan, do you have any other testifiers?
No, I do not.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak to this? Please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ralph Mays, and I would just like to have you touch base and look at sections 2 through 3 through 2 through 10. I think in the policy committee the other night, the original language was 2 through 3, 2.3 through 2.6, and it was changed to 2.7 through 2.10. So it seems to be redundant. I think the part 2.4 through 2.3 through 2.6 was supposed to be taken out because the State Department of Education indicated that they did not have the ability to track the Title I or other remedial services.
Ms. Mays, if we look at page 2, that was the technical amendment we just passed. We removed 2.3 through 2.6 and then renumbered.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify in this bill? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to testify on it, but I do want to ask Representative Beinert, what dollar amounts would you be inserting on page 4 in line 4.3 for each of the fiscal years 08 and 09?
Representative Beinert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we did inquire of the University of Minnesota on this matter, and they proposed $500,000 annually.
And then, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beinert, how about line 4.7? Is that different, the same, or a total?
Representative Beinert.
They did not, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, they did not submit any inflationary adjustment.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. This bill will be held over then for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Members, we're going to return to the beginning now of the agenda. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 810 to be included in, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Swales moves to House File 810 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. I understand you have a delete all amendment, Representative Swales.
Yes, I have a delete all amendment. If this could be moved, Mr. Chair, it would be H.O. 810-DE2.
Okay, Representative Swales moves, is this the DE2 amendment?
Mm-hmm.
All. All in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We first presented this in K-12 policy, and at that time, several of the people who are stakeholders in the provisions of this bill were concerned about some of the provisions, and so we met in my office. These people included a member of the Board of Teaching. There was a member from the Minnesota Association of Superintendents. We had Mr. Kilty. We had either Minsky or the University of Minnesota, I believe. And we talked about some of the requirements that were laid out in the previous bill that gave specific CEU units and things that had to be completed in order for a teacher to have the certification or the credentials necessary to teach a gifted and talented program. And the Board of Teaching particularly felt that this was a little bit too restrictive, that we needed to make that a little more generic so that the particular colleges and universities who were doing teacher training could set those the credit amounts or the CEU amounts, and also that should be something that was left up to the superintendents, so because they are mentioned in this bill. There is a provision. They were quite excited about the fact that they were at the same time that we were presenting this bill, they were working on their competencies that they include that the superintendents must have in order to have their certification. And so they said they would be more than happy to insert this into one of their competencies. So Mr. Kilty is going to address major aspects of the bill, but we do invite you to consider this very seriously, and would really appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Swales. Mr. Kilty, would you please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Bill Kilty. I coordinate gifted services in Spring Lake Park Schools. It's District 16. I'm a professor teaching in the gifted certificate program at Hamline University, and a member of the Minnesota Educators of Gifted and Talented, which is a statewide advocacy organization. I'm going to speak today in regards to this legislation, and I believe it's in the best interest of school districts, taxpayers across the state, and in the best interest of Minnesota's 85,000 gifted students. I intend to address a number of issues that are related to this legislation. And one in particular, I want to just give you a little bit of background on how this language emerged. Over the past 3 years, the Department of Education supported an initiative to re-examine priorities for gifted education in Minnesota. This initiative drew together nationally recognized experts in the gifted field, university professors, teachers, program coordinators, administrators, parents, and business leaders from across the state. They worked collectively over many months of volunteer service to craft a comprehensive document which provides research-supported recommendations that guide and support quality programming for gifted education. The executive summary of that effort was recently released by the Department of Education. Included in that report was specific language that focused on highly effective service providers. The focus of this initiative is reflected in the language of this legislation. We didn't enter this blindly. We took a long look at practices across the state and the current conditions of gifted education in Minnesota. We know of a recent state-of-the-state report on gifted education that was compiled by the National Association for Gifted Children that reported nationally 23 states required that teachers working in specialized fields for gifted and talented students had taken graduate courses or received a teaching certificate in gifted education. We also know that in that report from state gifted specialists from across the country, over half of those respondents identified professional development initiatives in gifted education, that is the provision of providing practical training for classroom teachers, as the most positive force affecting services for gifted students. Professional development in gifted fields is absolutely critical. Little or no attention is paid to gifted students in pre-service training. New teachers entering the profession are not prepared to differentiate their instruction to engage many of their gifted students. Two studies over the past 15 years support that statement. Those studies pointed out that little evidence was discovered. This is they were classic studies. They were called the classroom practices studies. They looked at over 4,000 classrooms looking for some evidence of differentiation. And what they discovered in this study and then the subsequent study was that students were only engaged in those differentiated experiences 16% of their time. I believe this legislation would provide the scaffolding needed within the state school districts that will lead to greater academic success for all students. Throughout the late 1970s and the early 1980s, in which the part I've done most of my learning around this field, differentiated instruction was limited to the domain of gifted education. In 1999, the then president of the National Association for Gifted Children, Carol Ann Tomlinson, published two books and a number of articles in nationally recognized education journals defining the elements of differentiated instruction. Her argument was, one size fits few. Since that time, many advocates have provided the professional development that has guided teachers on a path of deeper understanding. I believe this legislation will be a stronger force in expanding the cadre of teacher leaders in a school district with the skills and understanding to support other teachers on this complex and challenging road towards engaging and challenging all students. I believe that a good portion of the infrastructure is already in place to support this initiative. University of Minnesota, the University of St. Thomas, St. Mary's, Hamline all have gifted certificate programs in place. Some of these schools offer the coursework for online learning, making the learning available to a statewide audience. Intermediate districts, XUs, they're all available. What we've done is, in this amendment, is taking a closer look at some of the research that guided our work on the priorities list that I spoke of earlier. You'll see in the last paragraph on the legislation a reference to the recommendations of the National Association of Gifted Children and the Council for Exceptional Children that were both approved in 2006. That's a reference to the research that guided our work. It is research-based evidence that defines the kind of professional development that is critical to moving teachers to deeper understanding of the nature and needs of gifted students, and in turn support all students. I believe this language is critical to the effective use of education dollars already committed to gifted education, and I believe it's in the best interest of the state's gifted pre-K-12 gifted students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelty. Representative Scales, do you have any other testifiers?
Not that I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you. Members of the committee, any questions for either Representative Scales or testifier Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scales, I know you met with the Board of Teaching. Mm-hmm. Did they comment on cost to rulemaking? Why they're allowing you to use expedited rulemaking? And thirdly, in regard to teacher prep programs, did they mention any cost to having to incorporate now strategies for preparing teachers for gifted and talented?
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I believe that what we understood from the Board of Teaching is that many of these programs are already in place in these different university and college systems, so that it is a matter of just giving the language of what's asked here in the bill and incorporate into their programs. They did not talk to us about that there would be an additional cost.
Representative Erickson.
And then Representative Swales, how about the rulemaking and the cost to the Board of Teaching, especially for expedited rulemaking?
That was their language. That was their language. And once again, they did. That is not their language.
Can you give us a minute?
Representative Swales?
Ms. Larson, maybe.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swales, we did meet with the Board of Teaching, and they were concerned about full-blown rulemaking in this context. And so what is here is an expedited process, and if you read the language beginning on page 2, line 32, it's a direction to adopt a rule governing teacher knowledge and skill standards for gifted and talented education that substantially incorporates and is entirely consistent with the recommendations that Mr. Kilty just recommended. So essentially what it's doing is it lays out exactly the parameters for the requirements and simply directs the board to adopt them consistent with this document that was approved in 2006 by a nationally recognized entity that everyone acknowledges.
Other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this House file? Please, come on down. Welcome to the committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Judith M. Eaton-Lamp. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, and I would like to first commend Representative Swells for doing something that gets us moving off status quo, and I want to commend her for that. The Minnesota Board of School Administrators fully supports the goals of this bill. However, we believe that there's a more effective way of implementing competencies for administrators. Our board is currently in revision. We just completed the request for comment of Rule 3512. And in 3512, we have developed numerous competencies that all administrators, superintendents, principals, community ed, special ed, must have in order to be licensed. And we have commented that we definitely want to work with them and get it in the competencies. We have one in there, but it is not strong enough. If we strengthen that competency, we believe that it will be more effective, have more teeth in it for superintendents and principals. The reason we believe that is that superintendents and principals, in order to be licensed then, must fulfill all these competencies, including the challenging gifted. The bill right now, as it states, is administrators of programs for challenging gifted. The board believes every single superintendent and principal needs to have the knowledge, skills to run a challenging gifted program. If we put it in our role, we've agreed to do that. We're waiting for language from them. That'll be done. But the next step that follows is we are also the board that approves the universities and colleges that offer the administrative preparation programs for licensing. And we have to review them every 5 years. So therefore, we will be going to them and saying, you must have this talented and gifted program incorporated into your program. in order for us to approve you, to continue to approve you. So just so that, again, we are 100% behind the concept of this bill. We just believe if we go through, if we remove the administrators, we can put more teeth into it in the long run. The other actions I have taken is I haven't had a chance yet to talk to superintendents, but I've talked to both the elementary and secondary principals. They are very willing for the continuing, my office is the one that also approves the continuing ed units. We are very willing to work with the talented, gifted people to ensure that we have in our in-service programs challenging, gifted in-service opportunities. Because again, we believe it is critical that all principals, not just those of programs with talented, gifted programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lynn.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Swales.
One other person, Mr. Arneson. He's chatting.
We're going to keep this quick with you. We do have other items to...
Yes, I know, and it will be very, very brief.
Hi. Mr. Chair, and members, my name is Roger Arneson. I represent the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. We had the opportunity to meet with Representative Swales and go over this bill with her. We had some concerns about it, which she accommodated for us and have fixed it in this particular fashion. Frankly, we think this is a very good bill in this fashion and that it should go forward.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Arneson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or discussion by any of the committee members? Any other public testimony? Seeing none, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Swales. Representative Ward will turn to House File 420. And Representative Ward, while you're getting set up, I'll move House File 4, Representative Detmer, maybe you would like to do that.
Mr. Chair, I move that the House File 420 be moved.
Great. Representative Detmer moves that House File 420 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Welcome, Representative Ward, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Ward.
We're here today to talk about House File 420, a bill about physical and health education. Physical education is at the core of a comprehensive approach to promoting physical activity through schools. Health and physical education help students develop the knowledge, skills, behaviors, attitudes, and confidence needed to be active for life. And we want to emphasize that this is a lifelong learning skill. Representative Detmer and myself have clone bills. That's why Representative Detmer is here with me today, and
we're twins.
However, we both believe in physical fitness for life. At K-12 policy, I passed around this picture myself. They're on high demand, so I can't give them away anymore. But this was me 60 pounds ago when I was an obese, more obese than I am today. And I was an obese child that grew up to be an obese adult. We know that happens frequently. And I was not able to do the things that I would like to have done in my life now that I've lost 60 pounds and become more actively involved every morning through physical fitness, through nutrition, through all the things that I wanted to practice and needed to practice, needed to learn through my health and physical education classes that I took. I'm more productive a member of society, and Representative Detmer also will talk about his lifelong fitness skills.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee. Spending 30 plus years in the area of physical fitness and health education, I've been encouraging my students over the years to make this a lifetime activity in their lives. It needs to be part of their lifestyle. And you don't have to be middle-aged to all of a sudden figure out that you need to all of a sudden start getting in shape. When you find at middle age, many adults have some problems and all of a sudden they want to go out and join a fitness club. This is something that students need to learn all the way through school, and it will carry over in their life. And hopefully, I know in our program at Forest Lake, students have to actually write a fitness program and that they can carry out after they leave the classroom setting. These programs that they can write for themselves, they can use through their entire life. And having a teacher there, a fitness expert there, to help them, guide them through and developing their own fitness programs. And I'm also a master fitness expert with the military, and I work with a lot of military people who at the middle ages all of a sudden figure out now they can't pass the test, stay eligible in the service. So I counsel them and help them develop their own programs. So we need to encourage this bill, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Representative Ward.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Physical education has been required in the state of Minnesota since 1923 until the profiles of learning came in. And, you know, we're seeing more obese children with higher blood pressure, obesity, diabetes at the age of 10 years old at this point. And we know that that is carrying over into their adults, but just the recent research that we saw indicated that the life expectancy of our kids' generation is falling behind our life expectancies due to sedentary, lifestyle that we have produced with our children. Some of the things that this bill does, I'm going to read to them, and Representative Detmer's going to read to them, and then we're going to turn it over to the expert that we brought with us today that will really tell you why this bill is so important. One of the things this bill, House File 420, does is it requires the Department of Education to create statewide standards for health and physical education. It also reinstates a graduation requirement of one half credit of FIED and one half credit of FIED in order to graduate from Minnesota schools from the grades of 9 to 12. So in a 4-year period, two half credits, one half of FIED, one half of health. Representative Detmer?
As Chairman and Committee, it also allocates money to create a grant program that will support the initiatives to combat childhood obesity at the local level. And it also requires wellness plans to be posted on the Minnesota Department of Education website. And just to give you an example, in the school where I teach, you are required to take 26 credits to graduate. So basically what we're asking here is that one half credit, which should be in health education, and one half credit in physical education out of the 26 credits.
And I understand we have a testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Claire Gruntner, and I'm the Vice President of Physical Education for the Minnesota Association for Health, Physical Education, and Dance, basically the Professional Association for Physical Education and Health Teachers in the state of Minnesota. As a physical education teacher myself, I see the importance of physical education for our students in Minnesota every day. I've been teaching for the past 4 years, and I've helped many students learn how to live a healthier life. I definitely want to stress to you the importance of this bill, HF 420, for all students in our school. You know you need to move. After sitting here for a full day, most of you, I hope, want to get up and move around. Minnesota is currently one of only 3 states without statewide curriculum standards. As a result, an increasing number of school districts are reducing and eliminating the time that students spend in health and physical education. According to the Shape of the Nation report, Minnesota is receiving a failing grade in physical education, and the number one reason it names is the lack of statewide standards. We are failing as a state. Further, because Minnesota does not have statewide curriculum standards, we are missing out on federal funding. The Carol M. White Physical Education Program, called the PEP program, which provides federal funds to local educational agencies to initiate, expand, and improve physical education programs, are not being awarded to Minnesota because we are not meeting the requirements for state standards. In addition to the obvious health benefits, health and physical education is imperative for our children to succeed academically. Studies have shown that children who engage in regular physical activity have better test scores, higher academic performance, higher grades, and less behavioral problems. Like adults, moderate and vigorous exercise help children concentrate and achieve optimal academic performance. It is no secret we are currently experiencing a childhood obesity epidemic. The percent of school-aged children 6 to 11 who are overweight more than doubled in the last 30 years. During the same period of time, the percent of overweight adolescents aged 12 to 19 tripled. Pretty scary. Kids do not get what they need when they are not in school. Over 60% of middle schoolers do not participate in any organized physical activity out of the school day, and nearly a quarter do not engage in any during their free time. Ensuring our children learn healthy habits and the opportunity to engage in physical activity during school hours is one piece of the puzzle in solving childhood obesity. Finally, schools play an important role in childhood health. Health and physical education promote lifelong activity, helping to prevent the development of chronic diseases such as diabetes and obesity. As a physical education professional, I teach our children at a young age healthy habits that will last throughout their life. Physical education is one class where children are not confined to their seat. They learn by moving. By passing this legislation, you are ensuring children are receiving a well-rounded, balanced education that teaches the whole child. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representatives Ward and Devon, we have a number of committee members who would like to ask questions. Did you have a second testifier who...
No, Mr. Chair.
And members, we did in our packet have an A1 amendment, but we didn't know whose amendment it was. Is anyone moving this amendment? All right, well, we'll turn to the question. I'm going to turn to Representative Heidgerken, who is first on our list, and as members can take a look at that amendment. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, the amendment I like, because I was going to refer to it. You want to move the amendment first, or...
You go ahead.
I'll move the amendment to be included because it's something that has been brought up in many of my school districts of why they're not getting credit for it, and they're involved in extracurricular activity, whether it be wrestling, basketball, whatever, but it's a good amendment, so I'll move the amendment.
Representative Demmer, you wish to speak to the amendment?
Yes, I would.
Please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Heikerken. A couple things. Okay, so you're... Varsity and junior varsity sports do not really encompass the lifetime fitness standards that we would be covering in the classroom. The physical education, now there's national standards, by the way. We are developing a fitness program through these standards. And I don't know if, how many of you could actually name the five components of fitness. The cardiovascular endurance, muscular strength, muscular endurance, flexibility and body composition. All these things are covered also not only in physical activities but in the classroom. The kinesiology, the study of movement, is also covered within these standards. So this is in classroom instruction and in the activities. Now, being a coach, I know that sports do not necessarily, it depends on the coach, necessarily give an athlete some lifetime in terms of fitness standards. I think we also need to combine the classroom standards and the activities.
And I apologize for Representative Detmer. I'm going to turn to Representative Demmer.
Oh,
Representative Demmer.
Oh.
No, yes.
I do have a
problem. You have enough,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I thought Representative Detmer did a great job. and quite frankly, I support his view in this. I have to speak against the amendment, not because I'm not an advocate for extracurricular activities. I think when we start putting credit on extracurricular activities, we open a whole new can of worms, Mr. Chair. You know, now we're getting into playing time. We're getting into who makes the team, who doesn't make the team, and I've invested time enough. I don't make it, I don't have a credit. You know, what if I try out for a team and 3 weeks in the season I don't make it, and now I didn't take another course and I now need this half a credit? I really see some difficulty with this sort of thing. I'd have to speak against it. Not because I don't think these are good, but I think we're getting into a realm here that's that needs some study at the very least and some real close scrutiny.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to speak in opposition of the amendment as well, just because one of the things I want to add to Representative Demmer's comments and Representative Demmer's comments, that is kind of tough, is the fact that what a great opportunity for athletes to be mentors within a physical education classroom and a health education classroom. To come in and we are continually hearing about mentorship and shadowing and good, you know, role models. And what a great example a role model of an athlete would be within that FIED and health period. So I wanted to add that as well.
We have Representative Heidgerken and Representative Faust, Representative Ansels. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Demmer, I think, commented where I was going to go with that. And we've argued about this for, I don't know, the last 4 years. And but I like, I mean, this bill, Representative Ward, Representative Demmer, makes more sense to me than the foreign language one does. because you're bringing it all the way down to the ninth grade. And I think most school districts are doing that. And there's so many possibilities, even within FIED, within health, classes that can be taught that are lifelong classes and career classes. And to be left out, I think these should be one of the... That's why I always fought off changing the electives, because I've always thought about FIED as well, because we're taken away from FIED, which I think also is a very, very good class, so, and many possibilities. That said, thank you.
Representative Devlin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And I point out to my students over the years that, you know, the math, the sciences, the languages, the fine arts, they're all important just as any other course. But without a healthy body, all that knowledge that you gain will probably take you nowhere.
Thank you. Representative Fess.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree with you, Representative Warren, that, you know, the kids that are in athletic sports, they certainly can be a role model in these situations, and that's a great thing. And my son loves FIED classes. He just thinks that's the greatest class in the world. But he spends about 800 hours a year on a football field, a baseball field, or an ice rink. And I really don't think it would do him as much good to spend that time in that FIED class as it would if he could take an extra physics class or math class or something like that. So I guess I support this amendment. I love the bill. But this is just the one minor change that I'd like to see. So, thank you.
Are you responding to Representative Ms. Burton?
Mr. Chair, committee member, in terms of that, we're talking about half a credit here. Half credit of physical education, half a credit of health. Really, in the big picture, that's not a lot. I find with the athletes in my class, that is not an imposition for them, especially 9th through 12th grade. Now, also, you're talking to two coaches. I'm a coach myself, varsity White Bear Lake softball. I walk in there every day with a practice plan. If I hit on the fitness concept, that's great. I can tell you there's girls on my varsity team who have had the physical education class who can still use more. And athletes who do one sport for 4 years do not necessarily learn the lifelong concepts. They learn that one sport. And I've seen multiple softball players myself who after 4 years, that's all they've seen, that's all they've had. They don't make the college team. Where do they go now? They don't know the fitness concepts. They don't know how to go to the club. It's important that they have those.
We're going to get two more comments. Then Representative Ansells?
Very briefly. when I coached, all kids and all parents had equal access to all sports because the school district funded these extracurricular programs. Today, the reality is a lot of poor kids who want to can't participate in extracurricular athletic activities. And so to attach a credit which would be more accessible and readily available to kids of means as opposed to kids who don't have the means, unfortunately, Representative Heidgerken, I'd have to speak against your amendment for those reasons.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the second time today that I will have agreed with Representative Demmer, which is really wonderful.
We quote her in that one. How wonderful that is.
We're marking the tape.
But when he talks about opening a can of worms, I think he is correct. During the course of my career, I spent many years as the high school musical director, and I can tell you that if we did this for athletics, that it will be quite a riot at the principal's door saying, why can't we get a fine arts credit for having participated in the musical? So I think I'm going to have to say that as much as I appreciate the amendment, Mr. Representative Demmer and I are bonding right now.
It's a beautiful moment. Representative Heidegger, we're going to give you as the amendment for the last word on this.
Representative Swales, why not? Why not give credit to music and speech? And I mean, I've coached forensics for 28 years. I directed 28 plays. Why not give them a credit? They definitely deserve it.
I think I'm going to treat that as a rhetorical question. But I am going to now ask all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment does not carry. Representative Ward, did you have any other testifiers? Representative Detmer, did you? Were there any other general questions of by any of the committee members or any discussion? Please, Representative Faust. Representative Wilson was first. I apologize, Representative Faust.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, this is actually procedural, even to you, Mr. Chair. There's a provision in here that involves rulemaking. Has this been to GovOps? Does it have to go there?
It does. Mr. Crowell, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, omnibus finance bills do not have to go through the Government Operations Committee, even if they include rulemaking.
I can do no better than that, Representative.
Thank you.
Representative House.
News
to me. Thank you. My question is, do you know how many schools are currently not doing some type of FIED? Page 1.19, you're crossing out the line that gives the local schools the option. So how many local schools are opting not to do any type of FIED?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I think it varies across the board depending on the school district. I know some schools might say go 1 day a week, 2 days a week, or... I know my school, we have 8 electives that we offer along with the sophomore health and FIED, so it's kind of, you go from one school district to the other and you got all different types of programs out there. So what we're trying to do is come up with a look at the national standard that we have, and we're of one of three states that don't have state standards, so we're trying to get something organized here with the state.
Representative Anfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, does the department have a position on this?
Representative Ward.
Yes, they have told us that they fully support. I don't know if anybody is here from the department, but I guess
clearly that's good.
But we have not heard any opposition, and
good by me.
Welcome, Ms. Noble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Claire Noble, Government Relations Director for the Department of Education. Representative Ward is correct. We don't have any opposition to this bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, is the department then planning to cover the cost of the rulemaking in its own budget?
Yes,
because the money in this bill is for grants. Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair, I believe that we would ask for that money to be appropriated. I don't have the research with me, but I believe rulemaking generally costs in the neighborhood of $200,000, so we would not have that money to cover in our budget.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Noble, can you tell me, you said that the department's not opposed to the bill. Does the department support the bill?
Ms. Noble.
Representative Garofalo, the department doesn't have any problem with this bill.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify to this bill? Ms. Schwab.
Committee members, Mr. Chairman, Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I had the opportunity to share with the policy committee just a couple of our concerns, and they don't necessarily, one has to do directly with the bill, the other has to do with adopting more graduation requirements. Because of the adoption last year of the physics or chemistry standard for the 13-14 year, adding this would limit parents and children's choices in high school down to 5 electives. Now, I don't want to judge the merit of one elective versus another, but at some point we need to leave room for parents and students to make choices during their high school career. And the committee needs to have whether you're going to look back on other standards, but 5 is not a great deal to go into your high school career to go forward. The other piece that I'd like the committee and the authors to consider is school districts are in different phases of implementing FIED locally. We've had locally identified standards, and some have programs that are ready to roll out in accordance with their wellness policies. We want to make sure that rulemaking doesn't set those good actors back at all, and that we can encourage them and work forward as we go forward. And the authors, we've spoke just briefly about it, but they seem to be very open to making sure it accommodates those good actors going forward.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I'd probably direct this question again at Representative Detmer, who's a physical education teacher, and I can envision a half credit in health education. You know, we can all do that. The half credit in physical education, I'm struggling with trying to think of how we establish standards. I'm thinking about the different people that we have, sizes, shapes, types. How do we establish a standard in physical education? How do you how do we do that, Representative Detmer? I'm struggling with trying to establish a standard and what our outcomes and expectations would be from a program like this, especially in the physical education part. And how would you envision this being put together? If you put the equipment back together, then you can answer the question.
These microphones are shorter than the ones that are...
And Representative, we're going to need to keep it short because we do have other bills we do need to hear.
Okay, I'll be brief. Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, as I mentioned before, in the physical education area, we cover just briefly the 5 components of fitness. And during those, when we study each component, we actually do activities in those components, like cardiovascular endurance, muscular endurance, muscular strength, flexibility, body composition. And we actually take body fat tests on the students to see what their ideal weight would be. This is all done in an activity, and we organize activities around these 5 components. And when you develop a fitness program, you miss out on one of these components, you don't have a complete program. So I think if you look at the national standards, it encompasses these 5 components. And I know that our state standards would also encompass these 5 components. And every student that writes their own fitness program will be based on what their needs are. So it's an individual-based program that they would be writing. And we've done this in our system.
I'm going to ask if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to testify to this bill. If not, the House file, 420, will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Detmer. We're going to turn to House file 1487, Representative Peterson. And as Representative Peterson is coming down, I will move that House file 1487 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus finance bill. Representative Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill deals with a border issue between South Dakota and Minnesota, and that I believe Superintendent Hacker from the District of Kandy will make clear that the existing policy between states is not working, and there doesn't seem to be a comprehensive approach to it, and I'm not sure if that's correct to say, but we are proposing that the border situation at Kandy along the Minnesota-South Dakota border is favoring South Dakota getting Minnesota money, and that they're reading from the bill summary that this would authorize special school aid for Kandy to compensate the district for lower aid amounts received from South Dakota. And according to 2006, it's about 35 students that can be served from South Dakota, and that equates to about $82,000 per year to the Kandy School District. Superintendent Hacker can explain the details of the need and maybe some of the frustrations and or loose ends as to why we're here with this bill.
Superintendent Hacker, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. I'm here testifying more for Kandy this time than Hendricks, as I was testifying last week. Really, I'm here to petition for a redress of an inequity. An inequity that's been in place since two former governors, Governors Ventura and Governor Jackal, decided no longer to have a South Dakota-Minnesota tuition agreement. And as such, what occurs now is Minnesota and South Dakota school districts must negotiate one-on-one between themselves for a tuition agreement. Now, the issue happens that occurs is that I have three different school districts to negotiate. Right now I do not have one, there are contiguous on the border with Canby. I do not have a student from one of the school districts, but I have two different tuition and two different tuition agreements, and they're both not favorable to Canby. What's happened is, as a result of the failure of that tuition agreement, the rule that exists says, after negotiating, if one of the other parties is not acceptable with that, if a parent of a student is not acceptable, they can request the resident school district to send the funding to the school district in which the child is attending. South Dakota is 51st in school funding in the United States. There are probably 50 school districts suing the state legislature in South Dakota as I speak. There are a number of school districts in South Dakota that enjoy Minnesota revenues for the students from Minnesota that attend in South Dakota. For me, it's an issue of inequity because primarily these are my students that have moved across the border. Just a geographic setting, Canby is 8 miles from the South Dakota border. 9 miles away, 1 mile in the South Dakota, is Lake Cochrane. Used to be full of nice cabins. It's no longer full of cabins. It's full of year-round homes, primarily from my residents that have built them there. I also have a neighboring community right on the Minnesota-South Dakota border, Gary, which has low-income housing. And what is happening to my students gradually is that they're moving to South Dakota. They want to retain the Minnesota heritage. Their parents went to school there. They've been going to school there for a number of years before they moved. We've got a great school district. As we all know, we all have great school districts. It is an issue in which I have no redress. I've talked to the South Dakota State Legislature. I've asked the Department of Education in South Dakota to address it, but they don't want to address it because it's not in their economic advantage to address it. I've talked to Commissioner Segan. She's well aware of the issue in the department. I've talked with the executive department. They actually fostered legislation, and we're going to introduce companion bills in the South Dakota legislature and the Minnesota legislature last year. But South Dakota didn't want to introduce the legislation for obvious reasons. So I'm stuck. You're the unstickers, possibly. Now, I'm not the only school that is in this situation. I'm the person leading the charge, I guess. Normally, when you're talking about a dispute between states, it's a difficult issue to resolve. I'm not going to go down the road of trying to take my neighbor to court. I'm not receiving special ed funding for some of my students right now, and that could be a federal issue. I'm looking for a solution. I'm looking for a compromise. I'm looking for two states to return to working together like they were working together 15 years ago. The issue, I think, for all states or for all border schools is the question of open enrollment. We are supporting choice in Minnesota, and people are choosing to come to Canby Public Schools because we have an excellent school system.
Thank you, Superintendent Hacker. I know that Representative Benson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I may have missed this, I guess. So the open enrollment law allows people, residents of another state, to open enroll in the state of Minnesota. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. South Dakota, Minnesota.
Who in the world passed that law?
It's one they had at tuition.
Superintendent Hacker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We learn something every day here.
Other members, questions or discussion? Representative Peterson, do you have any other testifiers?
No.
Superintendent Hacker?
Yes. I believe Gray Schwab from MSBA would like to testify.
Welcome back up, Ms. Schwab.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to get up and testify in favor of this bill. Canby brought their story to the Delegate Assembly for the Minnesota School Boards Association in December. And the delegates there representing all the school districts across the state of Minnesota saw a situation in which that's where the district was located. had an impact on their finances and was moved to adopt it as a position. I can think this is probably the first time in our history that we've done something being a statewide organization. But it really is a compelling story and one where Canby is at wit's end to find a way to make these measures workable. And it should be about the best needs of students. So we support this and encourage the legislature to look at not only Canby's story, but many of our other border school districts who are facing issues like this from around the state.
Thank you, Representative Heidbergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Schwab, if you would stay for a second. I'm wondering if we are also having a problem with Wisconsin, Canada, North Dakota, Wisconsin.
Iowa.
Ms. Schwab. And Iowa. I always like to forget. I mean, I don't, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heidbergen, I believe there are some issues with Wisconsin. We've heard individual school districts come forward. I want to commend the commissioner. She's done everything within her power to make these agreements. But these are state-to-state agreements on how this tuition is paid. And South Dakota is refused to do it. But local is also, there's some rub in play there. So it would be nice to have sort of a statewide approach and how we're handling this so where you're located in the state doesn't cream your pocketbook.
Representative Heidbergen.
And Representative Greiling, I don't know, this is something perhaps we may have to look at because this is going to be an ongoing problem as we realize. So we may have to set some kind of funding mechanism going forth because it's going to continue to be a problem. You know, they're going to be coming back and back otherwise. Just some thoughts.
Thanks. Representative Garofalo.
Go ahead, Madam Chair.
He wasn't, okay. It wasn't a question.
Well, Mr. Chair, more of a comment than a question that I'm amazed that all the bordering states around Minnesota have lower education funding levels than us, and I keep hearing stories about how we're doing such a bad job here. Just an interesting commentary.
Representative Peterson, any final words on the bill?
It applies to more districts than just this one, but we decided to bring some attention to it because it's obviously a problem that is at a state level with an association, and appreciate your consideration.
And I should ask whether any other audience members wish to testify to this bill. If not, 14-2087, excuse me, will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Thank you, Superintendent
Thank you.
Hacker.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair, we're going to try to be very quick.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2018 for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill.
Representative McFarland moves House File 2018 for possible inclusion. Representative McFarland.
Yes, just a little brief background. In 2005, Governor's Get Ready, Get Credit initiative addressed the need to increase high school rigor and college preparedness. The Get Ready portion of the program allows students to take college readiness and interest assessments in 8th and 10th grade. This funding allows school districts and charter schools to voluntarily participate in this program at no cost to the students of their school districts. And I'd like to have Dr. Dirk Mattson, the Director of Research and Assessment for the Minnesota Department of Education, explain this.
Mr. Mattson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Dirk Mattson of the department. As pointed out, the current the funding that was set as a baseline in the original year that occurred at the beginning or just after the beginning of the ending of the special session in 2005. Therefore, we had a limited amount of time to ask districts to volunteer if they would like to participate in 2005. Or excuse me, for the school year 05-06, we had approximately 75% of the students participate in that, and we anticipated that would increase because of the time to let schools know and be aware of the opportunity. I will say in this current school year, we have roughly about 96% of students participating in this program, depending on which grade we're looking at. There are three tests, or there are two tests involved in this. The Explore test is given in 8th grade, and that is a predictor of how you're going to in 10th grade, assuming that you maintain good coursework. In 10th grade, the Plan test is also then a predictor of how you'll do on the ACT. Each one of these tests gives college readiness information. Currently, what will happen is we will run out of funding, and this will become essentially a first-come, first-served basis with a baseline, if not expanded. Because the 75% was less than, allowed us some carryover. We are able to cover year two in the biennium, but after this year, if we do maintain the high interest rate that we do have, we expect of a shortfall, and we'll have to make decisions on which schools are able to participate.
Representative McFarland.
Yeah, so in summary, then, the current base is currently $829,000. We'd be increasing $464,000 for a total of $1,293,000 per year.
Okay, thank you. Questions or discussion from the committee? If not, would anyone from the audience wish to testify on House File 2018? If not, Representative McFarland, any final words?
That's it. I hope you'll consider it.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. House File 2018 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, return to House File 615. Representative Walker.
You're quick, Carol.
Welcome, Representative Walker. And as they're settling in, I will move House File 615 for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Welcome, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do apologize. I was in the Health Committee. House File 615 is the Responsible Family Life and Sexuality Education Program. For those of you, real quickly, what it does is define some definitions on page one. On page two, it goes into the curriculum requirements, notice and parental option. On page three, it gets into the assistance to school districts, some funding opportunities, and some training. On page four, it talks about the parent option, and then it goes, into the funding. The changes that were made in Representative Mariani's committee are three pieces, and you do have you should have the first engrossment in front of you. One being the changing of the name to responsible all throughout the bill. Two being an opt-in opportunity for parents to have their students participate in this program. And then on page two, just making sure that, should be on line 10, making sure that just adding that parents must be consulted. But, Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop there because we have two testifiers in of time.
Thank you, Representative. It looks like you're turning first to Dr. Resnick.
Yes.
Dr. Resnick, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, distinguished legislators and guests. I'm Dr. Michael Resnick. I'm a professor of pediatrics and public health at the University of Minnesota, and I'm the director of the university's Prevention Research Center. Much of my work over the last 30 years has focused on effective approaches to teen pregnancy prevention, violence prevention, and ways of promoting the resilience and the healthy development of children and youth. I will tell you that this work has been widely used in two White House conferences on adolescent health, first during the Clinton administration and then last year at the request of First Lady Laura Bush. I have also served as a scientific advisor to the nonpartisan National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. I live in Minneapolis. My children are age 16 and 27, and I'm happy to say that they are public school kids. And boy, would they be upset if they knew I was calling them kids. Mr. Chair and members, this is what we know. And I will provide evidence to back up my statements either during the Q&A or in follow-up in whatever way will be a resource to this committee. Two points. First, medically accurate, responsible sexuality education in the schools is supported by the overwhelming majority of Minnesota parents, not just Minnesota adults. We have just completed a statewide survey of 1,600 parents of children and youth throughout the state, sampled by legislative district. We've asked parents what they would like to see taught in our public schools. Our parents want children to receive encouragement to abstain from sex and to receive accurate information about birth control, family planning, condoms, and prevention of pregnancy and sexually transmitted infection. We found that 90% or more of parents support this, and this cross-cuts political orientation, religious preference, gender education, and income level. I would refer you to the handout from our Prevention Research Center that summarizes some of these findings. I would also say that for those of you who might insist that a representative sample of parents thinks otherwise, I would very respectfully ask that you give me the opportunity to review your information for scientific accuracy. Secondly, medically accurate, responsible sexuality education in the schools achieves the following: delay in first stage of sexual intercourse, increased proper use of condoms and contraception among sexually active adolescents, and fewer sexual partners over time. Based on the current scientific evidence, other forms of sex education that only discuss abstinence and that include medically inaccurate information do not show these healthy changes in behavior. That's the evidence. And for those who might insist that the above is not true, again, most respectfully, I would ask that you allow me to review your data for scientific accuracy. So I thank you for this opportunity to briefly address you. I will be happy to answer your questions and be a resource to you any way I can, now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bridget Riley, and I am the Executive Director of MOAP, which is the Minnesota Organization on Adolescent Pregnancy Prevention and Parenting. We're a statewide nonprofit that has been working for 16 years to try and prevent teen pregnancy and to support young parents. 8 years ago, MOAP and the Minnesota AIDS Project joined together to form a coalition, the Sexuality Education for Life Coalition, to engage parents and healthcare providers, religious leaders, social service organizations, and school staff, basically anyone who would be interested in promoting science-based approaches to teen pregnancy, HIV, and STI prevention. The coalition now boasts more than 500 individual members and more than 50 organizational members who are all dedicated to the well-being of Minnesota's young people. Our coalition supports this bill for a number of reasons, but briefly, we believe it will strengthen the ability of Minnesota school districts to offer students high-quality science-based information regarding sexual health. It will clarify for students for school districts what policies and procedures to put in place regarding health education, sex education, and it will ensure that parents receive notice about the content of their district's programs. We're also pleased that this bill includes some parameters around discussing healthy relationships, because we think that that's a really critical piece of ensuring that young people are successful into adulthood. This also provides funding for the regional training sites, which existed across the state from 1997 until 2003. These sites, from Brainerd to Hopkins to Winona, were staffed by teachers who understood what was going on in the classrooms and what districts needed, what kind of issues they were facing. The districts in which these training sites were located became educational leaders on these topics in this arena, and they regularly reached more than 100 other districts throughout their regions with training opportunities, with quality materials, and with connections to local resources like public health agencies and to statewide resources like the Departments of Education and Health. We think that the regional training sites are an important part of ensuring that the success of responsible family life and sex education programs in the state. So on behalf of the statewide organization, the coalition that I represent, I'd like to leave you with the knowledge that almost half of the high school seniors in our state report having sex, that about 5,000 teenage girls will give birth in Minnesota this year, and that about 14,000 young people will acquire a sexually transmitted infection. Those are sobering statistics that I share with you because I believe that responsible sex education is one thing that we can make happen that will have an effect, a positive effect on these statistics. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Walker, do you have any other testifiers?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Walker. I'm going to turn first to Representative Faust. You have some testimony to read, and I know we have at least two folks on the list who wish to testify from the audience as well. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My son, Zach, who many of you have met, is a junior in high school in Mora High School, and he would have liked to be here to give this testimony himself, but because of school and baseball practice, he was unable to attend. But he recently, in an English class, they had a chapter on debate, and they had to choose a subject to debate, and the subject that he and his partner chose were sex education in high schools. He asked me to read at least a part of what their research showed, and I'll read the conclusion because it would take too long to read the rest of it. So here I go. More and more parents are not talking to their kids about sex. People say that kids shouldn't be taught their family People say that kids should be taught their family moralities, but what if their parents do not teach them? Then they are told falsities from their friends, but have no choice to believe it because they don't know any better. Another point that people look at is that if we teach them about having safe sex, then it is okay to do it. This is not true. The students are going to find out about sex. The only thing we can control is if the information is given to them from a teacher or from another kid that heard it from another kid and most likely is not true. Some students are going to have sex no matter what we tell them. For those students, the only thing we can affect is if they have safe sex or not. After the debate, they vote, the students not involved in it vote which side they agree with. And my son, who's very competitive, was very proud of the fact that they won 17-2. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Faust. Members, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the, we have two people signed up to testify on this bill as well. I'll make sure that we have time for them before we reach 3:45. So I'm going to ask those two. Remember, we had first Barb Anderson. Welcome, Ms. Anderson. Please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
And I do have some hand up here.
The pages.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barb Anderson, and I'm speaking in opposition to House File 615. I'm a former teacher, and I have been following the sex education issues for several years now and regularly attend the Minnesota School Health Education Conference, where comprehensive sex education is promoted. I would like to help you see the real content of mainstream comprehensive sex education now in this bill called Responsible Family Life and Sexuality, and to show you why this should not be mandated. A representative model is this Educator's Guide to Reproductive Health, and you have a handout that is going around that looks like this, and I have excerpts from this Educator's Guide. This was introduced at the School Health Education Conference just last month, and this is not one curriculum that is being mandated. This is one sample, and this type of curriculum comes under many different titles, but it is all under comprehensive sex education is the similar content. This conference was attended by hundreds of health educators from around the state, and this curriculum was distributed at free to health educators. It is published by the Birds and the Bees Project, and they train teachers using comprehensive sex education methods and educate more than 8,000 young people in the Twin Cities metro area each year. Again, as I said, this is just one type of comprehensive sex education, but it is typical, and your handout contains excerpts from the lessons for middle and high school students. Some of you have heard me speak on this before, so I will be brief. There are five short reasons why I am opposed to this bill and why, because this would mandate this type of teaching. Number one, comprehensive sex education. Give choices to young people without guidance. Teachers are told to respect youth, and this is on page 22, and their decision to be or not to be sexually active. Students learn to develop their own values, and they are told that there is no right or wrong and no good or bad choice. In this crucial area of their lives, comprehensive sex education is just simply giving students information without any direction. And that is like taking a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, colored on both sides, with no straight edges and no box top, and just dumping it on these young kids and saying, here, you figure it out, now you put it together. We would never consider teaching drug education this way, nor driver's education in this way. Number two, promiscuity is presented as commonplace and normal, while abstinence until marriage is actually scoffed at. An example of this is the classroom video DVD that is included, was given out free at the health conference, and it's called Captain Condom. In this DVD, Captain Condom asks the 15-year-old actors, who in the video appear to be naked under a blanket, is there anything in your family, religious, or cultural background that would prevent you from having sex, or do you want to save sex for marriage? And the 15-year-olds loudly respond, hell no.
Number three, the sexual content of the lessons often includes slang, sexual terms, explicit descriptions of contraceptives in the classroom, and graphic classroom demonstrations of condoms as safe sex using a wooden phallus, fingers, a banana, cucumber, or test tube. On page 81, the lesson states, condom use can be incorporated into your sexual experience in creative and sensual ways. Students are told that they can purchase flavored or glow-in-the-dark condoms and that they can experiment with their partner, and this is a quote, for purposes of pleasure and fun. These lessons violate parents' rights and they send the wrong message to kids. Number four, the CFIS guidelines are foundational to this curriculum and to all of comprehensive sex education. On the back of your handout, you will see just some of the samples of what is in the CFIS guidelines. And I got my copy of the CFIS guidelines at a MOAP conference I attended, and CFIS is foundational to MOAP and comprehensive sex education. You can see what they consider age-appropriate is much different from what you and I and most parents would think is age-appropriate. In comprehensive sex education, beginning at age 12 on page 16, students discuss vaginal sex, oral sex, and anal sex, and masturbation. All of this is done in mixed classes. For ages 15 and up, the contraceptive unit contains graphic instruction for condom use for students and how to make dental dams, and I quote, for oral sex on the vulva or anus. And I won't read all of this graphic information, but you can look at page 44, and it's all listed there for you. And you will see how they present in a very neutral manner these kinds of definitions for kids, including cunnilingus, analingus, or rimming. And then they say a new dam should be used if switching partners.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. I know that you had a chance to talk with the staff about, we have other testifiers that have to get in, and we actually finished at 3:40. Well, not finished, but we have the next committee will be coming into the room.
Okay.
So if you can wrap up that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Quickly, please.
Basically, what I'm concerned about is that this is the type of material that will be mandated if this bill's passed. Comprehensive sex education also encourages children to accept a homo, bi, transsexual lifestyle as normative and teaches that there are three equivalent forms of sexual intercourse. This bill has taken us in the wrong direction. We need true abstinence programs, and this is not it. Comprehensive sex education is a failed program that puts children at risk and does not respect the diversity of families and faiths in Minnesota public schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. And I know there were questions, but we did have one more testifier we're going to get in, if that's right, Representative.
Just real quick.
And I do apologize. We took a little bit longer on an earlier bill.
Mr. Chairman, I've got some handout. My name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I just want to make a few points. I think you have to realize that this is a mandate for the promotion of contraceptives for every public school, middle and high school, ages 12 to 17 each year. And it also encourages it for ages 5 to 11. So I think you need to realize this is a major policy change. Also, as was pointed out through previous testimony, there's more than meets the eye with comprehensive sex education. They pay lip service to abstinence, but the focus is on contraceptives. A heritage study, I included an excerpt from that, talks about the focus of these. They did a survey and analysis of 9 abstinence, true abstinence, and 9 comprehensive sex ed. And you can see less than 5% is spent on abstinence and on the comprehensive sex ed, and zero time is spent on marriage, and I think it was 28% was spent on contraceptives. So the focus is clearly on contraceptives. And even though I think you have to realize that the curriculums they're going to be using are going to be coming out of the comprehensive focus. As mentioned, there's promotion of alternative sexual lifestyles would be required through a program sponsored by the Department of Education. And, of course, as was pointed out, these curriculums are notoriously sexually explicit. And I believe that our concern is this precludes a true abstinence message being taught to our kids and, in fact, adds fuel to the fire. If you look at alcohol and cigarette education, we don't say abstain from alcohol, but then get into discussion of light beer or cigarettes. We don't talk about abstaining from smoking, but then encourage kids to use filtered cigarettes. And what this does is send a mixed message to our kids. A study of 10,000 kids found that they perceive their parents disapprove sexual activity, and at an early age they are less likely to be sexually active. That's common sense. If you send kids a mixed message, they're going to be doing what you don't want them to be doing. And I think it should be pointed out, the focus of comprehensive, and you heard it from a testifier, is reduction of pregnancy. But we think the focus needs to be on reduction of sexual activity, because contraceptives do not prevent many STDs, which are spread through non-intercourse sexual activity. Also, it doesn't reduce the damage from premature sexual activity. It does a disservice to our kids. It doesn't, as I mentioned, prevent many STDs. And it's what parents don't want. As Ogbe poll discussed with parents what comprehensive sex education involved, and they don't support this explicit graphic sex education. And also abstinence programs do work. The federal government has funded over 900 abstinence programs, and a survey of a handful of those programs showed positive results. In conclusion, we need to do what's best for our kids. A survey of teens of those who are sexually active, two-thirds regretted they were sexually active. Unfortunately, I believe this bill will lead us more kids to have those regrets. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Representative Hillstrom, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to state that I represent a school district that was the first in the state to do abstinence-only based sex education. We have it, and my daughter was one of the first groups of kids to go through, in which they showed us, they gave us a list, and we got to pick which class we wanted our kid to be in. So I read both very thoroughly, and I signed my daughter up for the class that I thought was the comprehensive sex education, only to find out I picked the wrong one. I'm pretty educated, and I picked the wrong one. So I had her move to the other class. So while she was in the comprehensive sex education class, I was working here. So I come home, and she says to me, Mom, there's only 7 days left of the semester, and you told me you wanted me to learn about 10 days of comprehensive sex ed, because that's what's supposed to be in the class, and we haven't started it yet. So I called the school to say, you know, I signed up for comprehensive sex education. Why is it that it was not provided? Come to find out, the teacher sent me a note home saying, if I knew you wanted your daughter to be taught comprehensive sex ed, had you come to conferences, I would have taught it in my class. Now, I am a person who believes very strongly in comprehensive sex education. We now have the choice, but it isn't even a clear choice. I strongly support Representative Walker's bill, and I urge members to support it as well.
Other members? Questions? Discussion? Representative Benson.
Just a very quick one. I wanted to ask Ms. Anderson, when you presented your testimony before, you had mentioned this program called Birds and Bees.
Yeah.
Could you tell me specifically what school districts in Minnesota teach Birds and Bees project? The actual project.
Ms. Anderson.
Not something that you say is similar to, but the actual project.
The actual project, I do not know the specific school district, but they claim to teach it to 8,000 students annually in the Twin Cities metro area.
That is only
one type of comprehensive
school. Where are these 8,000 students?
Where are these 8,000
students? Yes, I want to know
in
the
Minneapolis
school district.
St. Paul Public School District.
Do we have a representative of Minneapolis St. Paul Public School District here? Would you be able to answer the question as to whether you would teach you Birds and Bees project?
You know, it's going to be very difficult because we can't pick up your testimony. And
We're having testimony, and I'm taking it as fact. And I want to know if it's fact, because I'm not going to be listening to something if it's simply hearsay.
Representative Benson, if I could just ask the representative from Minneapolis, are you able to testify to that question?
Yes, sir.
Please come down, and if you would just testify quickly to Representative Benson's question. Ms. Anderson, are you responding to Representative Benson's question?
Yes, just in one response. My point was not that this is what is being taught everywhere. This is just a sample of what comprehensive sex education is all about. I could be showing you another one, reducing the risk. I could be talking about safer choices. I could be talking about Meek, Kite, or Holt. They are all comprehensive sex education that are taught in various districts.
Mr. Chairman,
we're going to take a quick answer. If you would introduce yourself, thank you for stepping in here at the last minute. Introduce yourself and just a quick response to Representative Benson's question.
Yes, I'm Shirley Sunnison. I teach at North High School in Minneapolis, and I do teach Health Science 1, and we do not teach the curriculum that was just specified. We have a nurse practitioner come in and give the information to our students in that format.
Okay, thank you. We also have an amendment that was in the packet. If someone is moving that amendment, Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to move the amendment because I want it redrafted. I don't think it's drafted to the correct line. So if this makes the omnibus bill, I will offer it then.
Great. Thank you, Representative Erickson. I'm sorry, Representative Benson. I wanted to make sure on that amendment.
And I don't want to take any more time. My point is, if we are shown a document and we're told that this is being taught or something exactly or nearly like it in the public schools in the state of Minnesota, I think it's misleading. I want to know exactly where these 8,000 students are. I taught in my district. We had sex education or whatever brand it was since the middle 1950s. And nothing like what is described in this material was even remotely close to that. Nor in any of the school districts I represent. I represent three school districts. And to suggest that this is going on somehow is misleading, and I think it does not help the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other final questions or comments? Representative Walker, I'm going to let you... Representative Heidkirchen.
And Representative Benson, I agree with you, but yet at the same time, Representative Walker's bill will repeal what we have in law right now.
That's a different...
Yeah.
Representative Walker, any final words on this House file?
Looking at the time, Mr. Chair, no.
Thank you, Representative Walker. House File 615 will be laid over for possible inclusion, the K-12 Omnibus Bill, and we stand adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.